You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, Wisconsin's so-called false electors settled a lawsuit against them and agreed that Joe Biden won the 2020 election here in the state. But the story may not be over yet in Wisconsin. A political scientist joins us for a closer look at the ongoing saga of the effort to organize Republican electors in Wisconsin and other states. First, it's the WPR year-end member drive. Keely Boltina is with me. Your support is vital to all the news, talk, and entertainment on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the largest source of funding. Take a few minutes right now to support this essential service you count on with your year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And Keely, this hour, a little extra reason to give.
It is very exciting. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500. This generous match is from current members, including a member in Cumberland, and it means that they'll match every dollar you give.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support right now. It's a great opportunity at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Federal and state tax dollars, which do come from listeners like you, they provide important funding for WPR. Still, voluntary listener contributions, your donations are actually the biggest piece of support for WPR.
You make the difference. You make the quality, variety, and independence of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal contribution for the service you value at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This member drive, you can support the essential news and entertainment that you value and receive access to Wisconsin state parks. You can ask for a 2024 admission sticker when you are already giving $25 a month or more. Ask for yours now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The end of the year is a great time to reflect on the things you value. The discussions, the news, the entertainment you enjoy every day on Wisconsin Public Radio have been an important part of your life all year long. Make your year-end gift right now. Get it matched dollar for dollar online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to support something you value.
Yeah, the programs you hear on WPR make a difference in your life. That's why you're listening right now. It's why you listen every day. During this year-end member drive, we're asking you to support your radio home.
Listeners who value public radio give what they can to support it. That's how it works. If you are already a member, thank you so much for making Wisconsin Public Radio possible. If you haven't become a member yet, today's a great day to become one. Make your first ever gift. Maybe it's $100 or maybe it's $10 a month. Give whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let's do some math on the air, Rob. Are you ready?
No, that's always
live
dangerous.
On the air. All right. Let's say I give $100 a month to WPR. With our dollar for dollar match, how much does that become for WPR?
Oh, that'd be $200 a month.
Wow.
I can do that kind of math.
Okay. What
Real
if,
easy.
What if I can give like $20 a month to WPR?
That becomes a $40. If I'm not mistaken.
Rob, you've passed every test we've thrown in front of you today. Thank you so much for your help on that. Our dollar for dollar match is in effect. We've got $2,500 that we're looking to raise. Give now at WPR.org or you can call 888-202-2552 and your support of WPR goes twice as far.
How about if you give like pi times the square root of 2?
Because
then I'm running into trouble.
Too far, Rob.
I don't know
Too
how
far.
Much. I don't even that's real. Yeah, if that's real money. Now, if you're not a sustainer yet, you can become one right now. It's easy to set up. You'll make ongoing monthly donations to provide reliable support for the programs you love. You can do it from your bank account or your credit card, online at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Okay, I have a quick comment from Carol in Hudson. Mm-hmm. Carol says, WPR! Exclamation point. I can't live without it! Exclamation point.
Carol, thank you so much. Glad we are here for you. Glad you love WPR enough to listen, of course, and to support it with your gift. How about you join Carol and join the team of literally thousands of other people from around Wisconsin and from around the world who appreciate Wisconsin Public Radio and who understand that we count on you to support it. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As a donor to Wisconsin Public Radio, you make this possible. You make this incredible service possible for you, but also for other people in your life who can't afford it. I mean, this is an incredible opportunity. It's an act of service, and it's one that you can do, especially as we round out 2023. It's time to give.
Make your gift now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. The 10 Republicans who signed papers claiming to be Wisconsin's slate of electors for Donald Trump in 2020 reached a settlement last week in a civil lawsuit against them. In the filing, they admitted their actions were organized as part of an attempt to improperly overturn the 2020 election results. They affirmed that Joe Biden won the election here in Wisconsin. The lawsuit remains ongoing against two attorneys who helped organize the so-called false elector strategy, Jim Troupas and Kenneth Cheesebro. Last week, CNN reported that Cheesebro is cooperating with the Wisconsin Attorney General's office as it investigates potential criminal charges in the false elector case. Now, those false electors haven't faced any criminal charges in Wisconsin. The State Department of Justice has yet to confirm or deny any such criminal investigation. Democrats, including Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, have called on one of those Republicans, Bob Spindell, to be removed from his role on Wisconsin State Elections Commission. We're catching up on all these moving parts in the elector saga and what it means for presidential elections here in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of this civil lawsuit settlement and the admission of Biden's victory here in the state by the 10 Republicans who signed on to this document? Do you think there should be consequences? We've seen charges filed in some other states in similar situations. Should that happen in Wisconsin as well? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science, an associate dean in the College of Letters and Sciences at UW-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk a little bit about the stakes in this whole false elector thing. The Republicans who signed these documents themselves have said since then, I think many times, we were just signing this in case courts changed the outcome of the election in Wisconsin based on ongoing lawsuits and recounts and what have you. But Wisconsin and other states, these so-called alternate slates of electors were part of a scheme to present those to Vice President Pence and say, hold on, we've got two different slates of electors. Stop the presses. We can't count these votes. Can you talk about the importance of this part of the 2020 election story?
So, as you said, originally when we are a few days out from the November 2020 election, there was talk of voter fraud, none of which has ever been shown to actually have happened, but there was talk of voter fraud and very close elections in Wisconsin. It was, you know, around 20,000 votes. And so at that time, what happened was Republicans in several states were encouraged by the Trump administration and some of their attorneys to come up with a plan to have these alternate slates of electors as a way to be at the ready, so to speak, should they need to convene and go forward with their vote in support of President Trump. But what happened was that as time went on, it was determined that, first of all, again, there was no evidence of widespread fraud. And even some of the legal arguments that were underpinning why these alternate slates of electors might be allowable were determined to be not appropriate by the Trump White House counsel and Trump attorneys themselves. So fairly early on, it became more than just this what we might do in case to a larger movement to present to Vice President Trump, I'm sorry, Vice President Pence, when it came time to actually do the counting of the votes and the opening of the electoral votes, to then have for him, in front of him, alternate slates of electors that they were hopeful he would then acknowledge as the legitimate slate of electors in these seven states.
Now, we've seen some states where there are charges filed against their equivalents, people who signed similar documents, Georgia, Nevada, I think is the most recent one. The thing I opened up here with, Susan, was a civil lawsuit filed by a left-leaning, a Democratic-leaning law group. What do you make of this civil lawsuit and this agreement by the people who signed this this non-legitimate elector document to say, yeah, it was a mistake, Biden won?
Right. So charges have been filed against these fake electors in Georgia, Michigan, and Nevada. In Pennsylvania, New Mexico, they added a caveat. Mm-hmm. The fake electors added a caveat that said something to the effect of, should Biden be determined to be the legitimate winner of our state, then we withdraw our claims. And that was, I think, a legal maneuver on their part. But you're right, in Wisconsin, it was different. In Wisconsin, what we saw were two Democratic electors and then a Democratic voter, a citizen of the state of Wisconsin, who filed their lawsuit arguing that the electors, and amongst other things, in meeting at the Capitol, had unlawfully used public resources, that they had acted as public officials when in fact they weren't. And so what we saw then was this settlement, as you indicated. Originally, the suit had asked for monetary damages, and that is still in discussion, but there's been nothing to indicate that there would be monetary damages. And so Wisconsin is unique in that regard.
Now, it's 2023. We've got another presidential election ongoing right now, in effect. Is it worthwhile? Is it important for us to look back at this particular 2020 effort and try to have some form of accountability, whether that's in a civil suit, as we've seen here in Wisconsin, or criminal charges, as in other states? Why look back now?
Well, I mean, I think that it's important to look back because in the case where criminal charges were filed, and some would argue in all of the states because the actions were similar, that there were illegal conspiracies, there was false paperwork that was filed. This was not a few people off on their own coming up with ideas. This was a coordinated effort to change the outcome of the election. And it's wrapped up in the January 6th investigations. It's wrapped up in other ongoing investigations. So we shouldn't take a blind eye just because it seems sort of farcical when you think about it on its face as far as its legality.
We're talking to UW-Whitewater political science professor Susan Johnson about Wisconsin's so-called fake electors reaching a settlement in a lawsuit against them here in the state, and where investigations into the case could go from here and why it matters. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see charges filed against this slate that presented themselves as electors, at least in this one document? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Susan Johnson, political science professor at UW-Whitewater, with us today to talk about the so-called false elector scheme here in Wisconsin. There was a civil lawsuit settlement, the potential for a criminal investigation. CNN reporting suggests that such a thing may be going on here in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's attorney general not tipping his hand one way or the other. You could join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Susan, this civil lawsuit still going on for a couple of the attorneys involved, as we've mentioned, Ken Cheesbro, Jim Troupas. Cheesbro, CNN reports, cooperating with the states, with Wisconsin's attorney general, who, again, not saying he's doing anything. These attorneys also facing charges elsewhere in the country. Now, apart from the people who signed these electoral documents themselves, what are you watching for with some of the attorneys who helped coordinate this effort?
Well, Cheesbro, as you mentioned, he was charged in the Georgia conspiracy and pled guilty to a felony count of filing false documents. And obviously, he is concerned in self-preservation, let's say. And so I wasn't surprised to see that he is cooperating in Wisconsin with the investigation. There's probably an expectation in his plea deal, not necessarily officially that he's cooperating with Wisconsin, but certainly this idea that he should be cooperative in these other areas. He also wants to not be charged in Wisconsin and in other states where he has been involved. So I'm not at all surprised that the attorney, that he is participating in talks with leaders in Wisconsin.
Let's bring on a caller. Willem is with us in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, like, if I'm trying to commit voter fraud, it's a crime. Is it the difference between me committing a crime and them committing a crime is that they have more lawyers and more money? I mean, this is months after the election. 60 lawsuits were thrown out for lack of evidence. His attorney general told him that he didn't win the election. They knew that he didn't win the election. So why isn't this a simple case of, you know, guilty of voter fraud and either jail or massive monetary? Because this is, a, you know, an attack on our democracy.
Willem, thanks a lot for the call. Susan, is it as cut and dry to say this is equivalent to voter fraud? Again, the so-called false electors said, here's the reason we did it. It wasn't fraudulent intent would be their argument.
If you have a single person and you're looking at voter fraud, it's easier to bring charges. I think in this case, for context, the indictments in Nevada and in Michigan were fairly recent. And then the Georgia charges are all within, you know, the last few months or so. So if Wisconsin is investigating, it's likely that they're looking at all 10 electors and the attorneys and building a case. So it takes more time to do the investigating. And if in fact that's happening, that's what I assume the delay is.
Willem, thanks for the call. Crash is with us now in Milwaukee. Crash, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I just want to come at it from an independent perspective. I am neither a Republican nor am I a Democrat, but I absolutely am in favor of pursuing charges against these people. And the reason why is I feel like something really un-American is going on. I feel like we are in the middle of a development of a political class that gets to operate by their own rules. And I don't think that's good for our democracy or for our society at large. And if people commit these sort of conspiracies, they need to be held accountable, regardless of which party is in power and regardless of which party is guilty.
Crash, thanks a lot for the call. Susan, Crash pointing toward the stakes is easy to calmly talk about. Will people be charged or not? But the outcome, if people had taken these so-called alternate electors seriously, could have been really big for the country.
Right. I mean, I think that when earlier I mentioned that we shouldn't just, because it sounds, I use, you know, farcical, these attempts, and early on, many people dismiss them as that. I think that when you step back and you consider that this was a coordinated effort across several different states that was started in the White House, I think that the gravity is evident.
Thanks for that call. Susan, in just our last few moments, I mean, this is all happening, as I mentioned at the outset, as we head toward 2024 and the presidential election cycle. Do these charges, does looking back at 2020 risk being crowded out in the public attention because there's a whole new election happening?
Well, I mean, I think in regard to some of these items with fake electors and other things, I think that local and state officials are going to be a lot more careful because we're seeing a lot of folks being prosecuted for crimes that I don't know when they started, they realized the gravity of them. I think that people are going to be more aware of the gravity, and that gives me some comfort thinking moving forward.
Susan, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Happy always join you.
Susan Johnson is Associate Professor of Political Science and Associate Dean in the College of Letters and Sciences at UW-Whitewater. She was with us today to talk about the latest legal cases involving fake presidential electors here in Wisconsin. Now, Keely Boltina joins me for the year-end member drive here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on WPR for in-depth conversations. It's your support that keeps these discussions going strong. Your gift right now makes a difference this year and as we head into 2024 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a $1-for-$1 match in effect right now that's coming from current members, including a member in Cumberland. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 into $200. You get the picture. Take advantage of this match. Double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now. Do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And that last conversation, we dug into some really fresh, recent news about this ongoing story that stemmed from the aftermath of the 2020 election. Wisconsin, a huge part of that story, as we heard. It's the kind of conversation focused on the big news and the context for that news here in the state. You can count on that from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, absolutely. Something uniquely Wisconsin from the Wisconsin vantage point for Wisconsin audiences. WPR is listener supported. That means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Then make your gift.
Sustaining members provide vital and stable support for Wisconsin Public Radio. If you are already a sustaining member, thank you so much for your ongoing support. If you're not a sustainer yet, become one right now.
As a sustainer, you make those ongoing automatic monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card super easy to set up at WPR.org or on the phone at 888-202-2552. And you'll feel really good every time you listen because you know that your support is always current.
And when you do it right now, you'll feel extra good because you will know that your gift is being matched dollar for dollar by current members who are challenging you, daring you maybe to make a first-time gift or an additional gift for the end of the year. This hour, and just till the end of this hour, we have this big challenge match, and I want to take full advantage of that. You can help do that. Get your gift doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It really is a big challenge match. It's up to $2,500. We have $2,488 left to match. Mm-hmm. We can do this. Now is the time. As Sammy, our colleague, said, we got to start somewhere. So thank you so much if you've given that gift. And if you haven't, now is the time to get that donation to WPR doubled.
You understand that we count on you for funding that helps keep these great conversations possible each and every day. Put that into action right now. It's a great time to do it with this dollar for dollar match. Give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Get that gift doubled right now. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, have you ever gone to vote and then taken a picture of your ballot and then shared it with others? Did you know that might be illegal? Or maybe it's not. A First Amendment law expert joins the show for a look at a new case tackling the ballot selfie issue and whether or not it should be legal. First, Keely Boltina joins me for our year-end member drive. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported. You make Wisconsin Public Radio programs possible as we head into a new year when you give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Right now is a really exciting time to be listening during our member drive. We have a dollar for dollar match up to $2,500 that's in effect right now. It's a great time to donate because we have current members, including a member in Cumberland, who are doubling every dollar that you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. Double the impact of your gift right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you hear a variety of expertise and viewpoints from different guests, people quoted in news pieces, callers, and commenters via email and Facebook bring unique perspectives to the conversation as well. Because there's so much great food for thought on these programs, you probably find yourself starting conversations with stuff like, yesterday on WPR, I heard. Well, it's time to take some action. Participate in making this programming happen with your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You get to make the decisions. As the donor, you decide how much to give. Maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
That might be what you spend every month on. A takeout or entertainment, for example. Stuff you enjoy, stuff that makes life better, just like listening to WPR. The important thing is that you decide what amount is right for you and then make your gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
WPR is a treasured resource in Wisconsin. It's your source for in-depth news, community conversations, and smart entertainment. This member drive, support the essential public service you and your neighbors rely on, and get access to another treasured Wisconsin resource, the State Park System. Ask for your 2024 admission sticker when you give $25 a month for the WPR programs you value. From the beaches of Lake Michigan to the hills of the Driftless area, you'll enjoy access to more than 60 parks, all while supporting your favorite public radio station. Give now and ask for your pass. Here's how.
Make that gift. Ask for that little extra thank you when you go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Keely Boltina. Your support during this year-end member drive makes the news, talk, and music you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount to give.
And giving to WPR, pretty simple. All we need is your name, contact information, the amount you want to give, and how you want to pay.
Takes just a few minutes to make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. Those few minutes will fund your daily listening. Your support right now really does make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This year-end member drive is a really great opportunity to make your last gift of the year to WPR. It takes just a few minutes of time. Donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. When you give, you'll have that good feeling of supporting the station that you've enjoyed all year long and that you're looking forward to listening to in 2024.
We've got this big dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. Got off to kind of a slow start. Things are picking up a little now, but we're going to need your help to take full advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match in the next 20 minutes. Well, we can do it. We can do it if you give right now online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. That match means your support of WPR is going to go twice as far.
That's right. We have $2,433 left to match. Maybe you can give $33. Maybe you can give $2,400. Now is the time. Help us meet that match at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're not a sustainer, become one right now. Your sustaining gift will support Wisconsin Public Radio with reliable funding now and on into the future. Set it up. Takes just a few minutes. You go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
John in DeForest says, I'm already donating, but it's time to up my game. John, I love it. Thank you so much for upping your game, for giving an extra donation or increasing your monthly gift to WPR.
Make your gift. Join John and so many others, including the people giving that dollar-for-dollar match right now. Give at WPR.org or make a call, 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A couple weeks back, an Ozaukee County judge dismissed felony charges against a local official who posted a photo of his marked ballot on Facebook during the April 2022 election. The Mequon-Thiensville school board member was facing up to $10,000 in fines and 3.5 years in prison if convicted. He would have also been barred from holding elected office. The judge ruled that the Wisconsin law banning that practice violates the constitutional right to freedom of speech. Our next guest is an expert on First Amendment law, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever taken a picture of your marked ballot and shared it in person or online? Do you think it should be legal to do that? Why or why not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Eric Casper is a professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire and director of the university's Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me back.
I gave a quick rundown of this case. Can you tell us a little more about this particular instance where somebody shared that ballot on Facebook and faced possible charges?
Sure. Well, what's at issue here is a Wisconsin statute that makes it illegal if one, quote, shows his or her marked ballot to any person, unquote. And as you mentioned earlier, that is classed as a Class I felony in Wisconsin with some substantial penalties. And so when the person at issue here, Paul Buzzell, he had posted this photo of his marked ballot on Facebook. He claimed later he didn't know it was illegal, but he was then charged by the DA's office. Although even the DA in that case was quoted as saying that the best thing that could come of this would be an appellate decision as to whether it violates the First Amendment or not, really kind of looking for some guidance on what the constitutionality is of this law. And as you mentioned, just here within the last couple of weeks, the trial judge dismissed the charge in the case.
Now, this has come up every couple of few years since the rise of social media, Eric, where somebody will post this and find out, whoops, you're not really supposed to. What is the origin of this kind of law? Wisconsin's not alone here. Why do we have laws that say you can't show your marked ballots to other people in person or on Facebook?
Sure. Well, there are, when it comes to ballot selfies in particular, there's at least 18 states that prohibit the practice, including Wisconsin. But these are, in many cases, not new laws. In many cases, like in the case here in Wisconsin, these are older laws that go back to when we went to the secret ballot. And so the concern here, traditionally, if someone were to show their ballot to a third party, that it could be as a way for them to prove that they voted in a certain way because they've sold their vote to someone, or it could be part of some sort of extortion or voter coercion scheme whereby someone is threatening someone and saying, look, prove to me that you voted the way I wanted or else. And so those laws, well before there were ballot selfies, well before there was digital photography or the ability to post pictures online, there were laws like that that were put in place a century or more ago.
So now we have these challenges on First Amendment basis saying the argument would be, well, my political expression is I want to show you my ballot. So how do we weigh that interest in preventing, say, vote buying or voter intimidation versus the First Amendment interest here?
Sure. Well, there is, when we think about photographs, that they do have First Amendment protection. You know, there's the old adage that a picture is worth a thousand words. The Supreme Court case from close to 40 years ago that specifically held that the use of pictures serves an important communicative function by attracting the attention of the audience to the speaker's message and also potentially serving to impart information directly. We know that political speech under the First Amendment gets a very high level of protection, and there's plenty of Supreme Court cases on that point. But on the other side, there are interests that states have in terms of protecting election integrity and in being able to restrict some speech, particularly at the polling place on election day. For instance, laws traditionally have been upheld by the Supreme Court that would place some sort of limitation on the ability to actively campaign at a polling place on election day. And so those are some of the bigger issues that would be weighed in any court case evaluating whether or not this type of ban is constitutional.
Have we seen federal courts tackle this in any way?
There is one particular case on point. It's a case called Rideout versus Garner, which was a 2016 case decided by the First Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the federal appellate court just one step beneath the U.S. Supreme Court. In that case, there was a New Hampshire law that was specifically a new law that was passed in New Hampshire in 2014 to ban these types of ballot selfies. The law was challenged. A federal trial judge found that the law violated the First Amendment, and a federal appellate court agreed, finding that ballot selfies do have a special communicative value when it comes to First Amendment concerns by being able to express support for a candidate and communicate that the voter has, in fact, given his or her vote to that candidate. And in ruling the way that they did in striking down this ban, that federal appellate court said that, well, while in the abstract there is an important government interest involved in preventing vote buying and voter coercion, you need more at the state level than to show that that's an interest in the abstract. And in fact, in that case, New Hampshire could not identify a single case of vote buying or intimidation since the rise of digital photography. And so because of that, the court ruled that this law in New Hampshire was not narrowly tailored, because by banning all ballot selfies, it would, as the court puts it, as the court put it in that case, that ban suppressed a large swath of political speech. Banning all ballot selfies would be like burning down the house to roast the pig, which is quoting a famous Supreme Court case about protecting expression and making sure government doesn't prohibit too much expression, even when it does restrict speech that is outside of First Amendment protection.
Talking to Eric Casper, a political scientist at UW-Eau Claire, looking at ballot selfies, technically illegal under Wisconsin law. You're not supposed to take pictures of a filled out ballot and share them in person or online. But hold on, a court case, a judge says that runs up against the First Amendment. We'll probably see more court action on this in the future. Now, Eric, it seems like the potential for harm, like, okay, in the old way, pre-social media, if I'm running for office, I want to buy your vote. Eric, I'll give you $10 to vote for me in this hypothetical. Not asking to make this happen. I'd have to go with you to the voting place. You'd have to hold your ballot up and I could see it, right? Not very efficient. Social media, if I want to buy your vote and lots of other people's votes, once I see your selfie with the ballot on social media, you get the $10. Like, it seems like the potential for harm with social media is actually greater than the instances that the laws were created for in the first place.
Yes, although because there is a concern here with even if the law is content neutral, meaning it doesn't discriminate on the basis of content, there still is a test that this type of regulation of speech has to undergo. And the government has to at least show that in addition to accomplishing a significant interest, which would be preventing that type of vote buying or coercion, that the regulation is narrowly tailored. And the problem here in that federal appellate court case is that because all ballot selfies were prohibited under the New Hampshire law, that the law was not narrowly tailored to address just the government's interests that it said it had. And so what that suggests is that if a law banned ballot selfies that were part of a vote buying scheme or part of a voter coercion scheme, that law would be constitutional. But to simply ban all selfies, which in and of themselves involve political speech in terms of promoting both the right to vote and promoting people voting, but also promoting support for particular candidates, that in particular by restricting political speech like that, the courts have traditionally said that these sorts of regulations need to be narrowly tailored.
An argument I've seen for supporters of the current state of affairs is, okay, suppose a business owner said, employees, you might get a bonus if you show you voted the right way, or a penalty if you don't, or a union could do the same thing, or whatever interest group. It might be really hard to enforce that kind of law. And to spot when these things happen, could a state argue and say, because it's difficult to enforce narrowly, then we're justified in making this wider restriction on speech?
They could. And that, you know, in states where these laws are in place, that is often what's put forth by election officials in terms of making sure that there really isn't some sort of vote buying scheme or voter coercion scheme because of the difficulty of proving that. And also because a lot of times these ballot selfies are taken at the polling place on election day, where, again, the Supreme Court has said there's more of an ability to place restrictions on campaigning and election-related activities like that. There certainly would be an argument there. And even in that New Hampshire case, it was decided by the First Circuit, that decision was then appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, that did not then take up the appeal. And so we don't have a definitive answer from the U.S. Supreme Court on this particular question. We can just take some of these other Supreme Court decisions on related questions about the political speech and elections. And then, of course, we have these lower court decisions, which give us some indication, at least the direction that the law may be going.
All right. Now, looking to the future of this case here in Wisconsin, a judge said, no, this is Hockey County judge says, yeah, it's cool. This guy was okay doing this ballot selfie. The Wisconsin law runs afoul of the First Amendment. The prosecutor, I believe, in this case said, okay, hoping that this gets taken up at the statewide level, maybe action for the attorney general. What do you expect to happen next when it comes to Wisconsin's ballot selfie law?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, in terms of this decision, it's from a trial court, and so it doesn't have any kind of statewide precedential mm-hmm. value. There is a possibility that this case or another one here in the future could go up to the state Supreme Court, and we could get a definitive answer under state law, or we could get a case from anywhere in the country that's decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. Besides potential court action, the state legislature could change the law as well. The state of Michigan, their legislature legalized ballot selfies in 2019. Even here in Wisconsin, the state Senate passed legislation that would have legalized ballot selfies like this in 2020, but that bill didn't go anywhere in the assembly. So the law remained the same as it had been previously. So that's another potential avenue for change there. The legislature could ultimately amend the law, but if it doesn't, then we're waiting for a definitive appellate court decision on it.
Eric, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Eric Casper, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire, director of the university's Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. Talked to him about a recent Wisconsin case concerning ballot selfies, sharing images of your filled out ballot online and whether or not that's protected under the First Amendment. Now, Keely Boltina joins me for the year-end member drive here at listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Think back about how much you've learned from and enjoyed WPR programs in 2023. With the new year around the corner, take action now. Give the public media service you count on a big start in the new year at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. It's from current members, including a member in Cumberland. They will match up to $2,500. And let me tell you, we have $103 left to match.
Made a lot of progress while I was talking there.
That is incredible.
Fantastic.
We started with a gift of $12 toward that match. And now we are just $103 away from meeting that goal to have all of those dollars doubled. Thank you so much. And just what another great example mm-hmm. of the fact that no gift is too small. We love, love, love to hear from you. Thank you so much for giving what you can. Thank you for taking advantage of this match. We are so close. Help us get there and double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now. Do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
In that last conversation, we tuned in on a pretty specific point about our elections here in Wisconsin and something you may have seen in headlines this year or over the years. Somebody takes a ballot selfie. Uh-oh, they could be in trouble for it. We dug into why that is, where this kind of law comes from, some of the court precedent on it, how it fits in with First Amendment protections, and more. These are the kind of conversations where we expand what you see in the news and find out what's going on behind it. You can count on that here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, and you learn how things like this are quite relevant to you because maybe you took a ballot selfie. Maybe you're thinking about that for the spring elections. I mean, these conversations matter in your life. They matter, and they're here on WPR. WPR is listener-supported. Your donation makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. So go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Choose an amount that works for you and make your gift.
I'm Eve Robillard. I've been a sustaining member for a long, long, long time, at least 30 years. I grew up in Kewaunee, Wisconsin, and I can remember in 1955, I was in eighth grade, and there was a program from Wisconsin School of the Air that our teacher would nicely put on, and it was called Let's Write.
The recorded Wisconsin School of the Air feature Let's Write. Here's Marie Applegate.
Good morning, boys and girls. Today is Cat Day. Well, you might say today that cats are our purr-puss. You'll pardon the pun, won't you?
And I got to write a few poems or something. And I still do that once in a while today.
To make a difference in your community and beyond, visit WPR.org to get started now.
Make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Wisconsin Public Radio has grown and changed over the years, and we've been able to do it thanks to you and people like you who listen and give. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Rob, we got a dollar-for-dollar match. We have $53 yes. left to match.
Oh, so close.
We're so close.
Your gift could be the one that puts us over the top, that helps us meet that gift, that match full on. We can do it. We can do it with your help right now, but got to get online right now or call right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Few seconds to get your gift matched and to support great radio here in Wisconsin while you're doing it. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.